Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, a brand new week beginneth, dawneth, and several other things that end in ETH, because why not use Elizabethan English? We're going to, the country's headed back to the Middle Ages, but oh, never mind. It is the 9th day of January 2017. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That is where you go if you would like to be part of the madcap multimedia real-time extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Just go to headonradionetwork.com, click on chat room, and pick yourself out a screen name and a password if you've never done it before, and jump right in where you will be met by Don from Central PA, Jug of Punch, Laborman, Steve from Georgistan, all early arrivers capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has this fine Northern California winter's afternoon folded space to become Man Cave. And more will be along presently. And you are mighty welcome. Thanks for letting me know that I am on. Thank you for letting me know that this broadcast is going out. You know, sometimes there's an issue with that. Sometimes things are not well, sometimes the packets don't pass, etc., etc., yada, yada, yada. But thank you very kindly, one and all, for letting me know. It is a new broadcast week. Let's see, the 9th, 11 days. 11 days until, you know, like, freedom takes one in the shorts. 11 days till representative self-government goes weeping to its grave. 11 days until the inauguration of the orange hemorrhoid mouthed thing that somehow squeaked in over the trellis or over the transom or under the, who knows what, but you know what I'm talking about. 11 days. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, The Horn is a listener supported home for the resistance to modern American postmodern fascism, and we make that possible. Yeah, Marty, I did mean the Dark Ages. Not the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages. Very dark, very dark.
Dennis, there's some lovely filth down here.
We'll all be saying that soon. The Horn is a listener-supported undertaking. It is a listener-supported effort at providing a home for a safe place for dissent and conversation. And, well, you're mighty welcome to participate. Anybody's welcome to participate. Well, anybody except, like, you know, fucking Trumpanzees and right-wingers and Republicans and conservatives and ammosexual fundamentalists and whatnot. But people of goodwill, Democrats, progressives, liberals, people with functioning cerebral matter, you know, that kind of thing. You are more than welcome to participate in conversation, because we do what we do here. We call conversation radio. And moreover, it is, like I said, listener supported. We try to raise the tiny little sum of $200 every evening to keep things going. That's 1 at 200, 2 at 100, 4 at 50, 8 at 25, 16 at 1250, 32 at 6 and a quarter, or 64 at $3.13, in which we round up a half a hundredth of a penny, or, a half a penny, let's put it that way, half a hundredth of a dollar. We'll round up that half a penny and put that toward the upgrade fund for the upholstery in the Gulfstream 5.
Yes.
So if you would like to help us keep it going and start the second full week of 2017 not in a hole, well, then just run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the Contribute tab, where you will find a little form to fill out, a little, just a few fields. It's not particularly complicated at all. All you got to do is name, you know, who you are. Never mind the one about what it is that you do down there to the office for Doc across the street from where Miss Kitty runs the saloon there in Dodge City. Never mind. Just and if you'd like to become a monthly subscriber, which, you know, one of these days we're going to get to 400 monthly subscribers at $10 a piece one of these days, but not yet. But if you would like to do that, then click that little box and that says make this a recurring monthly donation, and boom, you'll be there. Getting ready to send out a whole passel of bumper stickers again. We do the envelopes by hand and all that stuff. It takes a little bit of time, but a bunch of new bumper stickers are going out. Remember, we've got the horn bumper stickers, and we've got They Want It All bumper stickers, and subscribers get one or both every time. Well, I mean every time, but I mean, who wants 50 horn bumper stickers, you know? But you get the idea. So hopefully we will knock down the fundraising goal for this evening, and I won't have to mention it anymore because I sure hate talking about it. But be that as it may, it is this here ninth day of January falls on a Monday, and you know what that means here. Yep. Mm-hmm.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
That's right. Hurry. The dulcet tones of the Calliope let you know that it is, in fact, Moran Monday on the horn. Right here, just a few simple steps off the Carnival Midway, you'll find us. A thin cybernetic veil, a canvas tent, a carnival tent, behind which are gathered right-wing Morans of all stripe, all form, all fashion. Morans of every possible configuration. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, trumpanzees, one and all. Republicans, libertarians, neo-Nazis, Klansmen. We have them all here in the Moran Monday tent. Yes, indeed. Kitties and cousins, aunts and uncles, brothers and sisters, moms and dads. Come one, come all. Just remember, when you step behind the Moran Monday curtain, well, you want to keep a close hand on anything that the Morans can get at, because the Morans can, in fact, be grabby. Purses, wallets, handbags, the baby satchel carriers, European-style messenger bags, and yes, even that iguana that you won throwing ping-pong balls at the goldfish bowl down on the Midway. You want to keep a close hand on it, because the Morans can get grabby. You can't tell the Morans without a program, and this is the program that tells the Morans. You just can't tell them much. Yes, indeed. For less than 17 cents per hour of programming for every $10 a month subscriber, it's all here for you every Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, throughout the entire year. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. And we are. Oh, we are. I want to start with an anonymous Moran. If I knew who the Moran was, I would certainly give you the name. But it comes from a post on Daily Coast, and someone unfortunately blocked out all the names. I guess we can't Moran shame here in Trump America. No, we can't. We can't. But it was a Facebook post of a story from C-SPAN. Senate votes 51-48 to repeal Obamacare. And whoever it was that posted the story said, "One step closer to fixing this mistake, and only a couple of weeks left of Barry's regime. 2017 is already looking up." Mm-hmm. Yep. So, someone responded, saying, "Really cool of you to treat those of us who need the assistance provided by the ACA with such disregard. Really sells that whole underlying theme of Republicans acting like vindictive prunts for every perceived slight at the hands of Democrats these past 8 years. It's a party that now openly celebrates the misfortune of others while simultaneously patting themselves on the back for making progress." Yes. So the original poster responded. Wait a minute. Get the hockey puck. Really, I'm not kidding. Get the hockey puck. Bite down real good and go two or three times around your head with the duct tape, especially if you've got the fancy camouflage gorilla glue duct tape. It's otherwise, you're liable to shoot it right across the room, okay? And you don't want the neighbors hearing you screaming when... No. So the genius who put up the original post, the especially the 2017's already looking up because they're getting rid of Barry's regime. Senate votes 51-48 to repeal Obamacare. Genius posts, "Jesus, where to start?" And I love Trump pansies because they think they're intelligent when they're really not. And in many ways, what makes them so damn dangerous is the fact that they're not intelligent and they don't know that they don't know. Okay? "Jesus, where to start? First, we're talking about Obamacare, not the ACA. Secondly, my health insurance is through the ACA, so I'm definitely not the kind of person to look down on others for needing help. I'm just saying I'm glad this is finally happening because Obamacare was a failure from the start. Remember healthcare.gov? All of this was the brainchild of liberals, and they couldn't even get the site to run right. So why should any of us have had any faith they could get socialized healthcare right? We didn't, and they couldn't. Again, it was a mistake that is finally being fixed." No, really. That's a happy little Trump voter who is glad that they're going to repeal Obamacare, but is equally glad that he's got the Affordable Care Act, the ACA, because it works, but Obamacare doesn't. Isn't that beautiful? Now, as a caveat, I should probably note that I cannot guarantee that that post is real. Somebody put it up over at Daily Coast, and unfortunately, they blocked out the names, so we can't know who the genius in question is. But it certainly jibes with all the other stories that have been all over the for-profit media about how the Trumpansies didn't exactly know what they were voting for. we've even talked about him, the woman in Kentucky whose husband is in terrible physical shape and needs constant doctoring, and she went out and voted proudly for Trump because he's going to make America great again. And then an interviewer kind of politely informed her that, you know, you voted to take your own husband's health care away from him, right? Because they're going to do that because they think that's what you want. Oh, I didn't know that. Now you've got me kind of worried. What are we supposed to make of this? I mean, Schadenfreude? Do we sit back, the rest of us who are going to lose our health care too, and go, ha! You didn't know you were screwing yourself. You just thought you were screwing them libtards, didn't you? Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. You can understand why I would make this the lead story on More in Monday, I trust. That's true. Labor man in the chat room pointing out, Bob, scrump voters are jagoffs. And there's really no room for debate on that anymore, is there? And by now, of course, you know what has absolutely eaten the intellectual space of the day alive. I'm talking, of course, about the audacity of Meryl Streep last night at the Golden Globes, which I did not watch. I'm trying to decide whether or not I'm going to keep DirecTV Now. It was really pretty funny. It was a couple of nights ago, Saturday night. And I looked at Agnes as we were doing our best Mike and Carol Brady impression, you know, just kind of sitting there in the freezing bedroom and trying to figure out something to watch or whatever. And I said, well, let's fire up DirecTV Now. And miracle number one, it actually worked. But then I've been a cord cutter for a while now. And so broadcast television is sort of weird for me because I haven't watched it in so long. And it seemed like every channel that I touched had a commercial on it. And I really have been away from broadcast TV for a while, and it was foreign to me. And they were everywhere, these commercials. Agnes and I wound up going back and forth between a rebroadcast of Office Space, which is always good. And Back to the 80s on MTV, just to remind ourselves that, yes, people really did once do that to their hair, and Mexican soccer. Unless I miss my guess, and I think I'm going to work on teaching myself Spanish this way, the word for the soccer ball in Spanish is pelota. Any Spanish speakers are free to let me know, but I think it's pelota. And somewhere along the way I heard extravaganza, and I'm guessing that's extravagant or something like that. And then, of course, we all know what happens when the ball goes in the net. And it was a particularly good game between, like, León and somebody else. Lots of scoring. But I caught one goal when, the guy just juked the goalie right out of his shoes. And then the magic word, goal, right? But this is all by way of saying that I did not watch the Golden Globes. And So consequently, I awoke this morning to find out that the guy who's going to become the president of the United States in, Jesus Christ, really? 11 days? Yes, 11 days. We got to come up with a word for this. When he loses his mind at 3 o'clock in the morning and his tiny little thumbs take to the tiny little keyboard of his phone and start tweeting things. Maybe, you know, could it be little 10-year-old Baron who's doing the tweeting? Could that be how he earns his allowance money every... I don't know. But he had apparently... Adolf Twitler had become enraged by the remarks of Meryl Streep, who received a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Golden Globes. And here's the fun part. Meryl Streep said some things. But the one thing she never said, well, there were two words she never said. And yes, I did notice it, Carol Baker, as did you. Meryl Streep never once mentioned either his first or his last or both names. She never said a word about him. She never said his name. But along the way, she did talk about what an odious thing it was and how shocking and how horrifying it was to her back in November 2015 when he mocked a disabled reporter. And you can probably remember back to the 2012 presidential campaign when Flush Flemball, the oxymoron in between chewing up handfuls of dope to get the refreshing burst of flavor, when he on camera jiggled his Jabba the Hutt-like physique in mockery of Michael J. Fox's Parkinson's, because Michael J. Fox wanted money not to be withheld from stem cell research. Well, Benito Cheeto doubled down, and in November 2015, as you recall, the video is out there. You can't get around it. He jiggled and twisted his hands in mockery of a guy who had written about Trump saying that he personally saw thousands of Muslims celebrating on September the 11th, 2001. And Meryl Streep said that that was horrifying to her. That it was sad, that it hooked her in the heart. Along the way, she also pointed out the fact that Hollywood is made up of a bunch of people who aren't from Hollywood. People from all over the planet who have a gift for representing the lives of other people inside their own bodies in film. And pissed off the Trumpanzees something fierce when she said that if you get rid of all the immigrants in Hollywood, that you'll have nothing left on TV but football and mixed martial arts, which aren't the arts. This in turn caused the Trumpanzees to begin immediately flinging great handfuls of poo, figuratively speaking, and for all I know, wherever they are, maybe literally as well, because somehow she had dissed mixed martial arts, which also would not exist if it were not for, you know, immigrants. So Trump lost his mind. Well, no, that's not the... We're going to have to come up with an entire new way to think and talk about him. Because, okay, he lost his mind. No, he didn't, because he doesn't have one to lose. Right? Yeah. He had a... News Ninja Gene suggests a cyber seizure. Or Steve in New York says a tweetcher. So we're working on it. But he hopped on the Twitter lickety-split to call Meryl Streep, who has more Oscars than Trump has bankruptcies, and that's saying something, a not very popular actress, not very well. What was the exact line? I can't recall. Which in turn has caused the entire internet to melt up down. And he's so I mean, this is pitiful. Did nobody ever tell him that the president of the United States in a country that prizes a semblance of free speech is subjected to withering ridicule? I mean, he used to heap it out. My goodness gracious. I mean, I can remember when he called for the execution of Julian Assange of WikiLeaks. I know. And then you know, there's... the scorn that he heaped on Barack Obama, suggesting that he wasn't born in the United States, an affectation. We won't call it an accusation, because an accusation has to at least partake of something factual. An affectation still held by a significant plurality, if not an outright majority, of the people who voted for him. But he did, and you know, right? You know when the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini tweets, his lips move. They have to. Meryl Streep, one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood, doesn't know me, but attacked last night at the Golden Globes. She is a Hillary flunky who lost big. For the 100th time, I never mocked a disabled reporter. Would never do that. But simply showed him groveling when he totally changed a 16-year-old story that he had written in order to make me look bad. Just more very dishonest media. Oh, Randy, I think you're getting close. Wait a minute. I think we got a little cowbell itch for this. A temper tweetdom. A temper tweetrum. Oh, I think we are. A temper tweetrum. So how did Trump know that she attacked him when she didn't even use his name? Could have been anybody, right? Could have been Limbaugh. Well, I mean, she said disabled, but yeah.
Overrated actress. Overrated. She's definitely not a 10. I mean, I wouldn't even grab her by the...
And so he continues to protest that he was not mocking the reporter when the video is all over the interweb tubes showing him, you know, mocking the reporter. But because it's Moran Monday, we have to have a little bit of audio, I suppose. And so this morning, with the temper tweetrum already out there and sucking all the oxygen out of the room, the bookers over at Fox and Friends got busy and you know, Kellyanne Conway crawled out of that box with a little bit of the dirt from the home country in it. I'm still convinced that, that Kellyanne Conway is actually Patrick Stewart in drag putting us all on. I mean, just do it. Just Google Patrick Stewart in drag. Click images. And you'll see what I'm talking about. It's terrifying. Not the drag. That's not terrifying. I mean, sooner or later, anybody who participates in the performing arts is going to wind up dressed as the opposite gender. It's been going on since theater was invented. I mean, come on. The very first time, I mean, you want irony? The Lysistrata, the Greek comedy that is performed during, at the height of the Peloponnesian War between the Athenians and their allies and the Spartans and theirs. It's a comedy, and it's predicated on the women declaring that they would no longer have sex with the men as long as the men persisted in making war. And when it was originally produced, times were different. But, of course, all the roles of the women were played by men who were in turn mocking men by walking around with giant phalluses strapped to their crotches. Yes, I do, Carol Baker. Carol, you mean Ava Brownway? That would be her. Ava Brownway. That's good. We're keeping that. But anyway, so, you know, Patrick Stewart drag looks just like Ava Brownway, Kellyanne Conway. But they found her and called her onto Fox and Friends, and I can understand why, because Fox is just a mouth organ. Well, house organ. Let's not get too prurient too early in the program, Bob. It's just a house organ for Trumpanzees, and Republicans in general, always has been, always will be. So they called her to come in and talk about what it was that Donald Trump really meant when he talked about Meryl Streep being, you know, overrated and all that.
That aside, we have to now form a government, and I'm concerned that somebody with a platform like Meryl Streep is also, I think, inciting people's worst instincts.
Oh, wait. I think she just accused Meryl Streep of incitement. Now it wasn't incitement when Donald Trump was encouraging his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking sycophants to beat the living hell out of people at his rallies and offering to pay their legal bills for them in the aftermath. That wasn't incitement. That was just freedom. But Meryl Streep, she's inciting people. And Kellyanne Conway says we have to form a government. Well, bullshit. You've got a government. The Republicans own the House, the Republicans own the Senate, and they've got the White House, and they're about to own the Supreme Court, too. That's why, from time to time, I refer to this as a giant shit tsunami bearing down on us faster than we can even comprehend. But Meryl Streep is the problem. Yeah, right.
When she won't get up there and say, I didn't like it, but let's try to support him and see where we can find some common ground with him.
How do you find common ground with somebody who wants to put 11 million people in camps and eventually throw them out of the country? You know, the people who do all the actual hard work that winds up feeding the likes of Kellyanne and Conway and, you know, Donald Trump. How do you find common ground? Where's the common ground in that? I mean, I didn't like it. He won the election, but, you know, he didn't win the election. He won the Electoral College, which under the Constitution entitles him to be president of the United States, but he did not win the election. He does not have a mandate. But God, she looks a little more skeletal every day, doesn't she? But anyway, let's continue.
Like it, but let's try to support him and see where we can find some common ground with him, mm-hmm. which he actually has done from moment one. The moment he won, he said, I'm going to be the president.
Well, then there's the flip side, too. What do you tell your daughters about Hillary Clinton lied?
Well, yes, I tell them.
Yeah, what do you tell your daughters about grabbing by the pussy?
It's not nice to lie, and that, you know, 62% of Americans agreed with that. They found that she was not honest or trustworthy. Mm-hmm.
Never mind the fact that an actual analysis of the statements of Hillary Clinton and the statements of Donald Trump placed side by side show that Donald Trump lied six times as often as anything Hillary Clinton ever said.
Oh, Jesus, Hillary Clinton, my God! Oh, wait! The devil!
Yeah, I was told last night by a real progressive,
I'm glad he won. At least he won't start World War III with Russia like Hillary was going to do.
Yes, Steve from Georgia Stan. Kellyanne is morphing into the Crypt Keeper. A little bit more every day. Yes, indeed. Thank you, Steve. But yeah, you want to talk about the problems we have? Those real progressives are a problem because they're gonna collaborate. They actually think that there's something to be had out of a Trump presidency. Whoopsie. No, Ron, I'm just fine. Ron in the far frozen north. Says, you're going to have one of them apoplexy attacks. Nah, I had my apoplexy shot. And besides, I think my apoplexy froze off last night. Damn, got down to -1 and stuff. It was brutal. It was ugly. We're going to get a little break, though. I mean, low tonight's only in, like, the 20s. We'll be okay. But,
but what about all those lies Hillary told? Oh, my God, what about Benghazi, the emails?
So this is kind of, to be expected from Fox, isn't it?
And for those watching saying, Kellyanne's still talking about the campaign, Meryl Streep and Hollywood are still talking about that. We're trying to get our cabinet.
Welcome to seventh grade.
Appointees confirmed, and we deserve that respect, and the president-elect deserves that type of swift action.
No. They're trying to get his cabinet appointees confirmed before he even takes office. I mean, you realize that's going to happen this week. Betsy Amway is going to have her confirmation hearings this week, and so is Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III. Yeah. Carol Baker pointing out, excuse me, what percentage of Americans supported him? Math is hard, bitch. Yeah, because that's like less than, right, exactly. So we understand that she's going to go and get softball questions. What about that lying Hillary? But here's my next question. They then called her over to Chicken Noodle News. Yeah, whose reputation is, of course, in tatters because they, like Fox, like everybody else, absolutely base themselves normalizing and giving free airtime to Trumple Thin Skin. That one's Carol's. And here's my question. Why? Why is it necessary? Okay, maybe the answer is, oh, gee, Bob, it's a 24-hour news cycle. That's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of shit happening in the world that never even makes it to CNN. Maybe it makes it to CNN International, but it doesn't get to, you know, CNN for Rubes, which is the CNN that most of us get. I mean, the time they spent on a Kellyanne Conway interview, maybe they could have spent talking about, oh, Turkey. Or, hell, Iraq. or any of a number of nightmare scenarios unfolding in any of a number of countries on the African continent, or the ongoing unrest in India over the monetary reforms. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff out there. But no, instead they called Kellyanne Conway when all in the world they had to do is report what Meryl Streep said, and then report on his Twitter trump-trum. No, you're not. Brother Deacon Asa asking, am I the only one who finds Kellyanne's psychopathic level of calm, monotony, rather chilling? No, she's a character out of something Hannah Arendt wrote. She is a manifestation of the banality of evil. Oh, there's a good idea. Carol Baker pointing out, you know, maybe CNN could have spent that time talking about the double standard by which they held Barack Obama. Steve pointing out, subject line, deserves respect. About all he deserves is a turd in the punch bowl, and that's a stretch. Ron and Raleigh, how dare you? How dare you insult Patrick Stewart by comparing him to Kellyanne Scumway? By the way, is that a roundabout Star Trek reference? Well, it is. It always is. There always has to be one, Ron. At least I didn't get a Bob, Bob, Bob. That's how we know Ron's pissed. Clarence suggests Donalph Twitler. D-O-N-A-L-P-H. Nicely done. A note coming in from Robert in Australia. Subject line, the American disease coming sooner than you might think to Australia. Crikey, Bob. Apparently back in 2013, nearly 1,400 Senate ballot slips that disappeared in the state election may have literally fallen off the back of a truck. Now, my solution to problems like that is to use trucks with doors on the back that lock and that can be sealed with one of those yellow plastic thingies that's got a number on it that you have to cut to remove. However, a parliamentary inquiry has decided that the solution is for voters to be required to show identification at the polling stations, as in a photo ID or electric bill or similar. Queensland, Banana Benders, now has a state-based voter ID law. Thank you, Robert. I'll never forget Banana Benders. Queensland now has a state-based voter ID law, which, surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter, resulted in a fall in voter turnout. At a federal election, it's estimated that such a law could result in 165,000 Australians being excluded from voting. Yes, we're going to spend lots and lots of money on a problem that doesn't exist, rather than locking a truck properly. The parliamentary inquiry also recommended automatic voter registration, as against the current when you turn 18 you're required by law to fill in the forms to register. For some reason, the current Liberal Party doesn't like that idea. The Liberal Party, of course, a reminder, being the Conservative Party anywhere else in the world. They also recommended giving voters pens instead of pencils. I can hear it now. Hi, can I have another pen? This one doesn't work. Pardon me. Occasionally, Robert gives me the opportunity to do my cheesy Australian accent, for which I am eternally grateful. We live in interesting times, signed Robert from Oz. P.S. I don't watch broadcast TV. Every time I've switched over for a look-see in recent years, it's been a series of commercials that drag on for 6+ minutes. I can't be bothered. And all the commercial stations have had coordinated commercial breaks since the 1990s. So if you try switching channels, all you see are more commercials. That's where the Mexican football comes in, Robert. There are not a lot of commercials there. And, you know, after a while, it gets kind of interesting. I mean, I like what the rest of the world calls football and we call soccer. You call it corn. We call it maize. I do. I mean, I'm finally at an age where just watching people running that much, it gets me all out of breath. Okay. further reflections on the nature of Kellyanne Conway, courtesy of Ron, where it was 23 degrees below zero Fahrenheit last night before the wind chill. Yeah, I know. I need to shut up and quit. Right. You want prurient, says Ron? I think Kellyanne's a cyborg that got released with a program still in the beta version. Beta 0.1 version. I suspect that watching her fake an orgasm exorcism would be rather boring, don't you? I don't even want to think about it. As Barbara Bush once said, why would I waste my beautiful mind on something like that? Going back to the question of who's actually doing the tweeting, Stephen Vermont says, do we really need to know who did the keystrokes? I think that argument is a red herring. Russia's track record on Ukraine, protesters are Western plants and fascists denying responsibility for shooting down an airliner, etc., and elsewhere, comes from a framework of paranoia, insecurity, and pulling together the old empire. I don't deny Western involvement in Ukraine, but it was mild compared to a full-on invasion. Russia has been fomenting fascist movements all through Europe and elsewhere. I understand the history of U.S. interference in foreign elections, but now it's happening here, karmic aspect aside. Assange, as a lefty free information flow hero, is no more. I don't think he ever was, but that's me. He is now a right-wing fascist hero and was a player in the election. Hillary lost because she was the wrong candidate at the wrong time with all her weaknesses and vulnerabilities. This has been proved. Lost the female vote. Trump wins 39% of Hispanics, etc. But with misinformation campaigns, confusion reigns. I don't think the hack leak controversy will ever be solved to everyone's satisfaction. This works well. It won't be solved to the satisfaction of the sparkle fart powered unicorn pony brigade, because they will not be satisfied. I mean, Glenn Greenwald will always write another article complaining that no one has explained it personally to him, Glenn Greenwald, so that he can write an article about it and let out, you know, any given amount of classified information. That. And so consequently, the article will devolve into a seventh grade slap fight that's all about Glenn, just like every article Glenn Greenwald ever wrote does. Anyway, Steve says, I don't think the hack leak controversy will ever be solved to everyone's satisfaction. This works in Trump's favor. Trump is basing his governance model on Putin. I, for one, remain a steadfast anti-fascist as long as I can. Define fascist? Seems to be all around. It becomes a permeable type of infection. Will anyone know anything for sure again? This is how it works. That's what they mean when they say there's no such thing as facts anymore. Oh, great. That's good. That's good. Courtesy of Marty. Another TV show quote. A reply to those who like to say Clinton lost or we were in the losing side. May have been on the losing side. Not convinced it was the wrong one. And that, of course, is from Firefly. And as far as news and entertainment is concerned, John points out, news requires resources, money, and time. Entertainment's cheaper and keeps the company in profit and out of having to deal with any, you know, hard reporting. So that probably explains it too, but I happen to be old enough to remember the origins of CNN. And the CNN that's on TV now is about as far from the original vision of one R.E. Ted Turner as, I don't know, Lassie is from a bear baiting. So let's get this part over with. They called Kellyanne, Eva Braunway, Eva Ann Braunway, over to CNN in New York to respond to, to make excuses for her boss. Let's put it that way. So she showed up to be interviewed by hard-hitting, real-live, no-kidding journalist, Chris Cuomo.
It's,
he did
it's
it to
all
the
talked about in the election. I came on this network.
So you don't think it deserves an apology?
And talked about things.
If our kids did that, can you imagine what we would say to them?
I'm not going to bring my kids into this.
I will. If my kid did something like that, it'd be a really.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. Oh, wait a minute, Crypt Keeper. You brought your kids into it over at Fox when you were talking about how we tell our children about all the goddamn lies that Hillary Clinton told. Because I can go back and play that. It's not that long a clip. It won't be that hard to find. Here, let's do that. Oh, there they are, sitting on the couch. Yep.
And the moment he won, he said, I'm going to be the president.
Well, then there's the flip side, too. What do you tell your daughters about Hillary Clinton lied?
Well, yes, I tell them it's not nice to lie and that, you know.
Oh, she tells them it's not nice to lie. Now, what was that?
Bring my kids into this.
I will.
I'm not going to bring my kids into this. Notice how she gets all quiet and seemingly meek.
I'm not going to bring my kids into this.
I will. If my kid did something like that, it'd be a really tough day.
But look,
an iPad
you have to listen to what the president-elect has said about that. Why don't you believe him? Why does everything taken at face value? 62%.
Oh, you have to listen to what the president-elect has said about that. Never mind what your lying eyes saw. Never mind what your lying eyes heard. You have to listen to the syphilitic toddler in chief to be when he says, I didn't do what everybody saw me do. Up is down, left is right, dark is light, hot is cold. Oh, hello, Mr. Orwell. How are you today? Oh, just smashing, Bob, smashing. This is everything I could possibly have ever dreamed of. In fact, it is.
Of Americans, according to CNN's polling, said Hillary Clinton can't tell the truth about anything. And yet...
And who was right
given,
behind her
no,
in that
she
analysis.
Was given the benefit of the doubt here constantly.
When?
You can't give him the benefit of the doubt on this, and he's telling you what was in his heart. You always want to go by what's come out of his mouth rather than look at what's in his
it's
heart.
It's a gesture that he's making on video. Everybody can see it. I'm not judging the man. I'm judging...
You have to know. You have to judge him by what's in his heart. What is this with the Marilyn Monroe voice when she thinks she's is that where she goes when she knows she's in a corner and she's about to start lying, lying like a rug given to a member of Congress by an Azerbaijani oil company? Is that it? I don't know. I don't know. But this is just the tip of the shitberg. Because there's a whole bunch more other stuff. Oh, nice. New name for Kellyanne coming from Kitty in Boston. Shkreli Ann Conway, Martin's long-lost parasitic twin. Well, darn, I'm going to have to check in the chat room and see if anybody else is having the problem. Ron says, I've lost the feed about 10 times tonight. To paraphrase Jim Wright, my internet service is even more spotty than the usual crappy service provided by Cooter and Pistol, my internet service providers, and transmission repair, also bait. Well, Ron says other listeners are having no problems. So I'm fairly sure it's on my end. Well, of course, the little squirrels in the series of tubes are very, very cold up there, Ron. I mean, I got a note from Christopher in the Northwest Territories last night. Minus 32. Brother Deacon Gerald pointing out the stream has been flawless for me tonight. Carol Baker says, when white people do awful shit, I thought we could never know what's in their heart. Oh, that's so true. That's so true. But it's not really awful what Donald Trump did, you know, when he mocked a disabled reporter. But the larger point is poor, and I do mean this in the form of respectful sympathy. Poor Meryl Streep had an image in her mind of an America that is better than the America that we are, or a bunch of us are. Because she thought that people would see that clip and be as sickened and horrified as she, a decent human being, was. But they weren't. Because we're not that good anymore. We're certainly not that nice, and we're not that decent. At least not the Trumpansies and their fellow travelers, the Klansmen and the neo-Nazis and the misogynists and the xenophobes and the bigots. And let's not forget the homophobes. Yeah. We're not better than that. And it has been remarked time and again that under almost any set of circumstances, that would have ruined a traditional politician. But an entirely different set of rules was crafted for Twitler. He could say anything, do anything, and it would be normalized, and not just normalized, but celebrated by the for-profit media. We thought that mocking of a disabled man or differently abled man would be some sort of point of no return for Donald Trump. Well, we do so only if we can somehow manage to forget Les Moonves of CBS. Donald Trump may be bad for America, I don't know, but he's great for CBS. And they were saying the same thing at NBC and ABC and CNN and Fox. Oh, hell yeah. And that's why it wasn't the end of him. Because there was never any point in time at which anybody in the for-profit media looked up and said, enough is enough. We've got to call this thug out for the punk that he is. We don't give him any more free airtime. And in fact, we do not cover him. And it certainly wouldn't have, it would not have been a signal moment. Because they've made that decision about tons of candidates. It was something approaching impossible. Just to call up a candidate who comes readily to mind. Despite the fact that he was filling freaking arenas with tens of thousands of people, it was almost impossible for Bernie Sanders to get the coverage that Hillary Clinton got talking to a half-empty high school gymnasium, where they had to EQ the mics to knock down some of the room boom. Huh? Oh, Jesus, what have I done? Oh, now the sparkle fart powered unicorns are out there screaming, DNC, DNC, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. But it was hard for him to get coverage because a pre-existing decision had been made. But they could not bring themselves to make that self-same decision about a guy who had the entertainment value. And see, there we are. We're right back there. We're right back there with what John said a few minutes ago. Entertainment's cheaper and keeps the company in profit. They were not going to strangle the goose that was laying such golden eggs. And so, yeah, the Joe Scarboroughs and Mika Brzezinskis, the George Snuffleupaguses, and the Chris Cuomos and the other talking heads at Chicken Noodle News, they all own a big chunk of this. And as Jug of Punch points out in the chat room, at least Meryl Streep did have the presence of mind to remind the Guardian, and she, you know, she stroked him a little bit first. She blew a little smoke at him and told him what important guardians of freedom they are, and said, "Please do your damn jobs going forward." And I think inherent in that was the fact that they had damn sure not done their jobs looking back. So here we are at about 2 minutes past the hour, and we'll call it quits on the filibobster there. There's still a whole lot more stuff to go into, some of which is very, very serious, and some of which has real-world ramifications that extend far beyond whether or not Washington, D.C. has run out of ball gowns. Oh, shit. Ron in Canada pointing out, Bob, the for-profit media are capitalistic enterprises. Why are we surprised when they act like capitalists, i.e. chasing of every available dollar? You got a point. Dave in South Carolina says, corporate media's mission is to increase financial return to shareholders. This guides what they cover, what they investigate, and what they say and what they show. Facts must never impede this. I think that theory comes straight from the Larry, Darryl, and Daryl School of Broadcasting. Anything for a buck. Oh, and by the way, there's a certain football game being played tonight. In regard to that, David points out, Nimrata Haley went to Clemsucks, as if I need another reason. So I take it, David, that you will not be offended when I say roll tide roll, y'all. Scott and Punky with a note. Kellyanne Conway's Marilyn Monroe voice. It's her version of Bill Clinton's quavering voice, lip-biting thing when he wanted to convince people he was being honest or sincere. You mean when he'd shake that thumb at us?
Yeah.
And continues, I'm no Bible scholar, but Kelly needs to blow the dust off her good book and share this passage with Trump. But those things which proceed out of the mouth come forth from the heart, and they defile the man. That would be your Matthew 15, verse 18. David in South Carolina says, Kellyanne Cruella Conway. This way, she did, wait, what are those initials again? Oh, yeah, Kellyanne Cruella Conway. This way, she can have jewelry made with her initials on it, or stitched into her clothing, or start a clothing line with her initials on it, or maybe a line of white bed linens? Oh, yeah. And, hey, thanks very kindly to Charlene for getting us started this evening. Thank you so much, Charlene. We've now only got $180 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. $180, 18 at 10, 1 at 180, 2 at 90, 4 at 45, 8 at 2250, 8 more at 2250, and we'll be done with fundraising. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully people will jump in there and stand shoulder to shoulder with you, and we won't have a fundraising hole to begin the second full week of 2017 here as we try to keep the resistance funded. So, yeah, break. And, hey, if you want to get in on the conversation, you know how to do that, right? 304-574-8178, 304-663-4676. Either one is fine. Or Skype to Skype from anywhere on little old planet Earth, such as it still is and may not yet soon be, Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Horn. This is, well, this is a home, not the home, but this is a home of the resistance. It's a no collaboration zone. It's the horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid. The Alan Parsons Project from Tales of Mystery and Imagination and The Telltale Heart. I thought that somehow kind of kind of fit the mood for the evening. Yes. This is the horn for the 9th day of January, 2017. And hey, after entirely too long an absence, there's Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions. Hey, Carol.
Hey, what up?
Got your ball gown?
Honey, they don't call those ball gowns at the Klan. They call them robes.
Oh, with the nice stitching and Kleagle Fred over there over the right. Yep. Well, I can tell you this much: the fancy overalls are all gone out of the Walmart here. Apparently, Trumpalacha is going to the inauguration.
You know the difference between a ball gown and a robe?
No.
The hood.
Wait a minute. Oh, and is the hood on the ball on the robe or in the robe?
Oh, I'm sure it's tucked in the waistband, tastefully, of course.
Yeah, the thing, hood, thug, punk, yeah. Going for the double entendre there.
I'm just telling it like it is.
You are. You're just not being politically correct, aren't you?
Yeah, something like that.
Yep. Well, how's life in Hooterville?
Oh, you know, just as red as ever. Kremlin red.
Yeah, it's special that way. Have your Trumpansy neighbors started referring to you as Tavarich yet?
No. I think that's a little bit beyond their ability to, you know, kind of have any sort of an understanding what that means.
Well, but they do know that Pooty Poot is just a big old snuggly, cuddly, lovable, squeezably soft, autocratic, God-fearing Russian dictator, right?
Fuck, I remember a time when we were having a Friday on the front porch and somebody sat there and was trying to lecture me about what a great man he was, what a strong leader.
It's kind of, yeah, I remember that as well, and I remember who. And I'm kind of wondering, I mean, does that tell us something about the roots of this? Because it's not like we're talking about someone who was conservative or right wing or anything. I mean, I've really spent time, Carol, and I mean, this is kind of a serious question. Where did this Pooty Poot is a great guy thing come from? I mean, they don't just appear out of thin air.
I don't know. I have no sense of how anybody can think like that, because I'm not historically illiterate. You know, I mean, I know how to read. I know how to read other people's writing. I've got a very clear sense of the shit that he's done.
Yeah, I get that, but I guess what I'm asking is if we in a community as tiny as this, if we were seeing that pro-Putin crap as early as we were seeing it, doesn't that mean that the disinformation campaign was broader than most people perhaps even suspect or realize?
Absolutely. And those of us who were smart enough to know it was bullshit sat there and listened to it, shaking our heads, going, I can't believe what I'm listening to.
See, I got...
This is somebody I thought was reasonably smart.
Well, yeah, I understand. Yeah, me too. But here's the question. We knew what he was up to. We knew what he'd done to reporters. We knew what was being done in his name to the gay community in Russia. We knew what he had done to the women from Pussy Riot. And still this stuff, I mean, it feels, how can I put this?
Well,
it feels like an anthropological moment, if that's the right term.
Well, it kind of is.
I mean,
the interesting thing is that he's had such a symbiotic relationship with evangelical Christians for a very long time. And we saw that.
You mean Putin?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, there was Franklin Graham trying to suck up to him and was going to put on a big shindig until the Russian Orthodox Church shut it down under the pretext of no proselytization by anybody but Russian Orthodox.
And it was also American evangelicals who were over there helping them write the Kill the Gays law.
I thought that was Uganda.
No. They were helping the Russians do that, too. Real upstanding Bible-believing Christian American patriots offering aid and comfort to the enemy.
I mean, this is... I'm conflicted. I don't know about you, Carol, but I am. I'm conflicted. Because there is an element... And I hate to even confess it, you know, there's an element of truth in the fact that the United States has a less than trustful, functional relationship with its own spy agencies.
Yes.
Especially going back to the Reign of Error. You know, I remember before the 2004 election when the New York Times quashed a story about domestic spying on the pretense that it might have had an impact on the election. When in point of fact, it might have had an impact. And the impact it might have had would have been the right one. Maybe Ohio wouldn't have been fixable for Dim Leader. And yeah, I remember the Downing Street memo. And I remember facts being fixed to suit the blah, 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 blah. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And I remember even further back, Carol. I remember when the CIA completely blew it and had not a fucking clue that Pakistan was about to blow up and test its own first nuclear device.
Yeah, it was a real shocker.
And, you know, and there at CIA headquarters, they done what?
Mm-hmm.
And they had not a clue about AQ Khan and North Korea until it was too late.
That's true.
And I don't mean to be making the other side's case. I'm not trying to do that. But I also remember that in the run-up to the war... Go ahead, what?
This is all about how... This is all about dissemination of information. This is about how Americans there's some things that just cannot pass test. And you know, these are the who learned things like, you know, critical thinking skills that know that this is bullshit. And it's like, why does the Pumpkin Fuhrer talk to Americans via a tweet when he won't hold a press conference? You know, Bob, it's like, because complicated geopolitical theory can all be boiled down into 140 characters for him, because he's that simple-minded. And he believes that what he's doing is removing the middleman, removing the lying press from words. And all you have to do is go to Twitter and look at his tweets, and there are people there. And I'm not even sure that they're people. Bots and trolls who just troll everybody who calls him out for lies. For every one person who calls bullshit on what he's saying, there are 10 there to just sit and troll him and attack them. And his America is so small, and he's pretending that social media allows him to speak to the American people, because he treats Twitter like a brain that's only talking to a small fraction who believe all the bullshit that he says. It's true.
You know, I've come to wonder, Carol. And I saw a story earlier today, I think you saw it too, about the woman who has been subjected to a nasty little troll storm of neo-Nazis because she's leading a campaign to put pressure on Betsy DeVos. Hey, Carol. Carol, is my audio reaching you okay? Because you're breaking up something fierce.
Yeah, you're reaching me fine.
Okay. Okay. You are now. So, like, don't move.
All right. I will not move.
And just, you know, keep that one arm up in the air, holding onto the coat hanger with the aluminum foil on the end.
Okay. I got the cat under my arm.
Okay. We're good. So, no, what I was asking, the story about the woman who, she did a screen cap of a neo-Nazi assault on her and then tweeted it out. And Twitter shut her down, but didn't shut down the neo-Nazis. Have I got the core of that story right?
Correct. You got it straight out.
I'm beginning to wonder.
Yep.
I'm beginning to wonder if Twitter is even looking at its own system. You know, you mentioned bots and sock puppets and whatnot. But it's one thing to have alter egos and other identities and so forth. I wonder the extent to which there might be some of that fun Russian infiltration of Twitter.
Sure, because we have no way, you know, Elliot Spicer told, he made a big deal saying, I think it freaks the mainstream media out. Well, you know, you got to break that number down a little bit, assuming his number is correct, and we both know that it isn't. You have to assume all those people are Americans, and they're not. And then you have to put that audience in perspective by comparing it to the current U.S. population, which is somewhere around 320 million people. That's 14% of the American public. But you have to add up his current Twitter followers with Facebook followers, and people on his YouTube channel, and his Instagram. And how many of those people are following him on all four platforms? So there's no way that he's reaching all of the people. And it's unclear how many of his social media people are Americans or bots, and a lot of them very much could be. Because a report from like 2 months ago by the website TwitterAudit.com estimated that about 2.5 million of his followers are either fake or inactive. And I'm not knocking him for that. It's just the reality of using Twitter. Because Kim Kardashian's Twitter followers showed up. So, you know, you gotta realize that he could act like he's cutting out the middleman, but what he's really doing is he's silencing the press. He's making sure that no one challenges anything that he says. And he's answerable to no one. And then he sends his toadies out to appear on the Sunday shows to explain what he really meant. And you cannot make foreign policy or talk about things that are important in 140 characters. Life is more complex than that.
Well, by a long shot. And so, you know, here's another question, though.
Mm-hmm.
Was he sitting, and we're speculating, of course, Was he sitting there watching the Golden Globes? I mean, how is it that he knows about every perceived slight?
Well, the interesting thing is why would he care? You know, why do you even care? It's the nature of the beast. If you're going to be the most powerful person at the seat of government in the United States, you think that you're going to be fawned over and adored by everyone?
Hi, Grandma.
I have it's no me, Pete. Idea what the hell that is.
Me neither. Was that me or you?
That was me.
Oh, okay. That's usually me. That's usually something that happens on my end. So, yeah.
No, that was me.
Okay, I'm getting some relief.
But honestly, who cares? Who cares about, you know, him tweeting about how shitty Arnold Schwarzenegger's...
Oh, yeah, there's that.
You know, ratings were on The Apprentice. There's a reason why people stopped watching it. It's because he's still the executive producer and he still makes money off of it. And people don't want to feed the beast.
Okay, time out. How is that legal? He's going to be the executive producer. He's going to be the executive producer when he's president, too. How's that legal?
None of it's legal. It violates the emoluments clause. Everything that all of his financial ties that he has. And this thing that his kids are going to run his company and
his son-in-law is going to be some sort of a somebody inside the administration? Isn't that going to run headlong up against nepotism laws?
Yeah, nepotism, schmepotism. Presidents can't have conflicts of interest because he says so. And, you know, it's also... This whole thing is also strange and sick and, people are just like beside themselves. I actually am glad for the time that I'm at work and I'm not watching all of this shit because it gives me time away from it to just live my life.
Well, definitely. I mean, I made a road trip yesterday that I really didn't want to make. But the one thing is I left out of here at 7 o'clock in the morning, didn't get back till 9. So that was 14 hours of absolutely no Trump. But the other side of that coin is that because of what's going on in my head, even without all the stimulus, is that, you know, I crossed from West Trump, Virginia, into Trump, Ohio, mm-hmm. and then I crossed for a little bit through Trump, Sylvania, before I got mm-hmm. back into West Trump, Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And this would probably be more appropriately suited to a therapy session than a conversation with a dear friend of mine, but. Sometimes that helps too.
Yeah.
I can't be okay with that. I mean,
well, none of us are okay
with it. I live in West Virginia, which is the undisputed Trumpiest place in America.
Mm-hmm.
But I crossed into Ohio and I felt this surge of anger. And I looked around me at the state of Ohio going, you bastards.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't do anything about it in West Virginia, but y'all could. And you decided to fuck your own country instead. And the same thing happened to me in Trumpsylvania. Should I get over that? Or is it okay to feel that way about my fellow Americans?
No. I don't think there's any getting over that. Because it's everywhere I go. It's everywhere I go. It's in my face. There is somebody standing there talking about what a wonderful man he is. And how they just love it because he speaks his mind. And this is what irritates me about, you know, Eva Braunway. Is that this idea that we're not supposed to listen to what he says, but we're supposed to know what's in his... We're supposed to see what's in his heart. What am I, fucking mystic? It's not my job to look to see what's in his heart. It's his job to show me his heart. And everything, by his every action, utterance, shows him to be the most black-hearted, evil son of a bitch that I've ever seen. And every decision that he makes is more horrifying than the last one. For as much as I despise W, I'll say this. The people that he picked... Well, Dirk Cheney picked himself, but...
And Brownie notwithstanding.
And Brownie notwithstanding, most of the people, you could look at them and go, okay, I disagree with them ideologically, but these are serious people, you know? These were people, you know, people in the intelligence community, people in the, you know, people he picked for his cabinet picks. You know, these were people who had experience and... You know, we're at least remotely connected to, had working knowledge of the subject upon which they were going to be governing. You know, when you make Rick Perry the head of an agency that he said that he would eliminate, when you make Rex Tillerson the Secretary of State, when he has zero diplomacy chops, you know, this is just like, this is, how can you not be sick sitting back watching it? Betsy DeVos, who wants to completely defund public education and make it to where it's going to be, you know, good education is going to be out of reach. Bob, I'm the product of a public education.
Same here.
And I don't think they did a bad job at all. I think I had amazing teachers. And we've got some amazing teachers in the Horn family. And I admire everything that they do. It breaks my heart to see what they're facing.
But scares you to death. And just by way of looking back, let's see. W's Secretaries of Energy.
Mm-hmm.
The office that will soon be filled by, no, really, Rick Dancing with the Stars Perry.
Yeah.
Rick Smart Glasses Perry. Rick Head Ranch Perry.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. W's first Secretary of Energy was Spencer Abraham, B.A. Political Science, Michigan State University, J.D. Harvard University. Mm-hmm. Okay. He was followed by Samuel W. Bodman, B.S. Chemical Engineering, Cornell, Doctorate of Science, MIT, Associate Professor, mm-hmm. Chemical Engineering, MIT, et cetera. Then there's Stephen Chu and Ernest Moniz, who were probably the two most competent people ever to occupy the office, and now Rick Perry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you know this or not. Maybe you saw this earlier today, but now that we've kind of talked about the HR fluff and stuff, you know, tweeting and whatnot, did you catch the terrifying little article over at Gizmodo?
About?
Headline, Trump just dismissed the people in charge of maintaining our nuclear arsenal.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Because, you know, what could go wrong?
There's going to be a period of time where there's not going to be anybody looking over the nuclear arsenal.
Sure there will be. Some guy named Doug.
Duganov.
Well, that too.
Gizmodo writes, the NNSA, and NNSA stands for... National Nuclear Security Administration.
Mm-hmm.
The political appointees of the NNSA were asked to clear out their desks.
Mm-hmm.
$12 billion a year agency that maintains and enhances the safety, security, and effectiveness of the U.S. nuclear weapons stockpile. Two officials, the head of the NNSA and his deputy, have been told to, you know, clear out. and there is no way of knowing when the new head and the new deputy will come in. And if the past is any prologue here, Carol, it was the entirety of the first Obama term and into his second one before his own choice for head of the NNSA was confirmed.
Exactly.
Now, maybe that was because it was a Republican Senate that was dragging its heels.
And, of course.
And didn't, you know, and you know, we can't let that black man do things white presidents did.
No. Never trust a Kenyan. Or a Sicilian.
Who wears a Muslim secret society ring and gives hand gestures. Right.
I guess. Or puts his left hand over his heart while listening to the national anthem.
Or, you know, or bows to Japanese emperors. You can only trust Republicans who kiss Saudi emperors on the mouth.
Oh, God, the fuck tartary.
What are the Trumpansies going to do when Benito Cheeto has to kiss the king of Saudi Arabia right on his mouth eater?
I probably hope he gives them some tongue because, well, you know, he's a deal maker. It isn't going to matter what he does. It doesn't matter. Nothing he does is wrong to them.
I mean, we called Reagan the Teflon president because nothing stuck.
Yes. I've been calling him Teflon Don for a long time.
Because I got nothing here.
I got nothing either.
Can you envision anything where the Trumpansies go, well, goddamn, that's it?
Well, how many West Virginia coal miners are sitting there going, you mean we're going to lose our health care? You mean he's really going to do it?
Well, those poor benighted souls don't even realize that the Affordable Care Act has the provision in it that's made it possible for them to more easily get their black lung benefits. You know, yeah, so that when God, they cough out their last big black loogie, that their widow doesn't have to starve to death. She'll get a check.
Yeah, you know. Got to thin the herd here, Bob.
But I don't think they meant to thin themselves, Carol.
No, they didn't. They meant to thin people like me and people like you and people like Barbie.
Yeah, and the larger Horn family community congregation.
That's,
you know,
right.
Because we're libtards.
That's right.
All right, let me take you on to the next. Let me ask you then, what of those real progressives who are completely behind him? Well, I'm glad he won. At least we ain't got that damn Hillary.
They were what? Pinos?
Oh no! They'll still tell you, you and me, us. You know, we're not really progressives. They're the real progressives.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever.
Well, I mean, I get that, but doesn't that bode ill for figuring out a way to stop this bastard?
Well, Bob, it's why we lose so fucking much.
What's that line, Jeff Daniels? It's why we lose so fucking always.
Yes. That's it. That is exactly it. And do you remember 6 months ago, the media was talking ad nauseum about how this was going to be the end of the Republican Party? I laughed my ass off. I was like, you guys, you're so fucking stupid. This is just the beginning of the Republican Party.
It's the beginning of a new Republican Party.
The new Republican Party. Although I got to tell you, Lindsey Graham and John McCain, the fuck?
Oh,
seriously?
They're the conscience of the Republican Party now.
Talking like sane people?
Don't invest too much in that, Carol. They'll be back to being who they are soon enough. I had another one of those moments too. Guess who one of the senators leading the objections to just repealing the Affordable Care Act is?
No, I don't know.
Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I kid you not. And of course, maybe it's because he's a libertarian ophthalmologist. Maybe he understands what'll happen when the insurance companies stop getting those sweet little welfare checks we've been sending them under the Affordable Care Act.
Pretty much. Oh, and did you see where little Marco and his little pals have put forth a bill to cut embassy funding by 50%?
Yes, wasn't that sweet?
Same place that had Benghazi fucking Tourette's.
Yeah, that because everybody's going to love us now.
Sure.
I mean, at least we won't have to worry about anything bad happening to the American embassy in, you know, Moscow.
Well, as they withdraw every single embassy appointment that Obama ever made.
Well, yeah, those people were told to empty out their desks and turn in their keys too. You know, mm-hmm. People with kids in school in places like Guatemala.
Yeah, turn in your credentials and get home.
There's a level of chaos that I don't, I keep saying it, but I want to reinforce it. There's a level of chaos coming that I don't think we're prepared for.
We're not prepared for it. We're not. When you called it a shitstorm of a tsunami that we can't run fast enough from, doesn't matter how far away we try to get from it. It's coming, and it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad in ways people can't imagine.
And the sad thing is, Carol, they're going to say, it's that damn Obama's fault. If he gets reelected, they'll be saying it in term two. They'll say it at the end of term two when he declares that the 22nd Amendment doesn't apply to him and he needs term three. You know, at which point he will be 78 years old.
Well, you know, if Obama had done something about Katrina, maybe we could respect him.
Yeah, if he hadn't caused the Great Recession.
Yeah. I mean, that's how long their memories are.
But I'm still trying to maintain some level of faith, Carol, in the goddess of irony. He's doing so many things that just beg her, you know, to drop an anvil on him.
Yeah.
It's got to be coming, doesn't it? I mean, you and I are not the only ones, and people have expressed it far more plainly. He ain't okay in the brain.
No.
I mean, there really is. All kidding aside, there is something fundamentally mentally wrong.
Of course.
With someone who sits up at 4 o'clock in the morning to tweet about petty grievances. I mean, the last person I saw doing that was Glenn Greenwald.
Yeah.
Or the occasional 9-year-old.
Oh, I had a supposed progressive sit there and inform me that I just didn't understand Julian Assange. You just don't understand him. You just don't understand Glenn Greenwald. And I'm like, no, I think my problem is I understand them all too well.
I mean, are you can't be. Are you completely, utterly, totally, and unequivocally satisfied with the information we've been provided about the Russian cyber espionage?
No, I'm not 100% satisfied.
Is there any way, is there any way short of sitting you down and showing you a bunch of classified, I'll have to kill you if I tell you information, is there any way to reach 100% outside of that?
No, no, of course there isn't. Of course there isn't. But I have to tell you, if I'm about 98% sure that it's true. And do you know why? More than anything else? Because Trump says it isn't.
And maybe because he called on the Russians to hack her email?
Yeah, exactly. And then they did. And then he's like, no, it wasn't them. No, it wasn't them. It was some 400-pound guy, you know, sitting. And I have to tell you, what the camera does for Vladimir, if he's a 400-pound guy sitting on his bedroom, in his bedroom, the camera is good to him.
Yeah, video always adds about 172 pounds to me that I can't afford. But I really am conflicted, but I'm inclined to take them at their word because they're talking about things that are deadly in earnest. This isn't yellow cake uranium. This isn't whether or not we're going to start a war to benefit Halliburton. This is whether we're going to have a country anymore.
Exactly.
And
that's exactly right.
And you know, I'm sure you saw the story about the military buildup in Eastern Europe.
Mm-hmm.
That was certainly reassuring.
Sure. What could go wrong?
Well, but again, that's Barack Obama sending him over there to try to put them in place so that we have to honor our NATO obligations and can't do it without without Trump looking like he's Putin's bitch. You know, which he is.
I was going to say, when did he stop looking like Putin's bitch?
And by the way, since we mentioned Putin, isn't it interesting that there's another crazy, vicious, malignant character from Russian history whose name also includes Putin. It just happens to have RAS in front of it.
Yes. Very nice.
A mystic who also, if I recall my Rasputin history, was also quite the ladies' man. I wonder if there's some kinfolks going on there.
I don't know. No, he couldn't be Russian, could he?
Well, I mean, the crazy ass grow a crazy ass long beard on Big Bad Vladdy Daddy, and let's see if he looks like pictures of Rasputin. No, but we're gonna put a shitload of tanks and howitzers and whatnot on like the Latvian and the Estonian border and dare the Russians to do something.
I know.
Here's a fun question, and you haven't been in the military, I haven't either, but it's interesting to think about. What happens if the Russians head for those borders, Trump's in office, and they are ordered to surrender or stand down to Russian forces? Will American troops do that?
I don't know. And that is a frightening thought.
It's terrifying.
I don't know.
I mean, it's the idea of us shooting at the Russians and the Russians shooting back. That's terrifying. There's no way we can put enough troops on those borders to stop them if they decide to do what they're going to do or do what they want to do. But would...
Makes those guys not watching the nukes make you feel all warm inside, doesn't it?
But yes, it does. No, it doesn't. But my point is everything is called into question now.
Of course it is.
I mean, you've got Mad Dog Mattis, who's going to be the Secretary of Defense, but even he, I don't know if you saw this, even he is already on the outs with the transition team.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're trying to load, up the Pentagon with little Trump toys.
Mm-hmm.
The Washington Post reported, what was the date? It was January 6th. Mattis clashing with Trump transition team over Pentagon staffing.
Yeah.
With only 2 weeks left before Inauguration Day and days before Mattis's Senate confirmation hearing, most major Pentagon civilian positions remain unfilled.
Yep.
Behind the scenes, Mattis has been rejecting large numbers of candidates offered by the transition team for several top posts, two sources said. The dispute over personnel appointments is contributing to a tenser relationship between Mattis and the transition officials, which could set the stage for turf wars between the Pentagon and the White House in the coming Trump administration.
To which I say, what could go wrong?
Well, I mean, this is the kind of thing that leads the military to decide in, say, you know, other countries without long histories of peaceful transfers of power, to decide that the civilians can no longer be trusted with the maintenance of the nation, and something, put this in scare quotes, something must be done.
I thought about it. I know, Bob.
May I dare suggest that we all need to become a lot more familiar with the operation of the 25th Amendment.
Yeah.
Because it really is kind of a screwy thing.
It is.
I mean, it's
ambiguous?
Well, kind of. But in a way, not. Whenever the it's Section 4 is what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other body as Congress may by law provide transmit to the president pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House their written declaration that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall immediately, Carol, all they got to do is send this letter. Assume the powers and duties of the office as acting president. So, what you need is the cabinet, and I think this is why they're putting such toadies in there. If the vice president gets a majority of the cabinet to sign off on a letter saying that that Trump will thin skin, that the spirochetes have finally eaten the last of his brain,
mm-hmm.
and sends that letter to the president pro tem of the Senate, the vice president, in this case Mike Pence, becomes acting president until such time as the president himself transmits to the president pro tem and the Speaker of the House his written declaration that he has no inability. And then he becomes president again.
Can he tweet it instead of sending a letter?
Yeah.
Does
so,
that count?
Nuh-uh. Lying Pence. So then that puts it back on the vice president and the cabinet majority. They get 4 days to write back to the president pro tem and the speaker saying, no, really, he's nuts. He can't do this. He can't discharge the powers and duties of his office. And here's where it gets really weird. I mean, bad acid weird, Carol. Mm-hmm. This is a direct quote from Section 4, Paragraph 2 of the 25th Amendment. Thereupon, Congress shall decide the issue, assembling within 48 hours for that purpose, if not in session. If the Congress, within 21 days after the receipt of the latter written declaration, or if Congress is not in session within 21 days after Congress is required to assemble, determines by two-thirds vote of both houses that the president is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the vice president shall continue to discharge the same as acting president. Otherwise, the president shall resume the powers and duties of his office. Now, that just sounds like madness, doesn't it?
Be afraid.
But remember, Mike Pence is a man of God who is, I'm sure, invested with a sense of the destiny that has brought him to this day. Now, Betsy DeVos, Jesus freak. Jeff Sessions, Jesus freak. What if Mike Pence convinces them that Jesus will come back if he, Mike Pence, gets to be president?
I wouldn't be surprised.
What if Mad Dog Mattis, I don't know how religious he is, what if he looks up and goes, this is going to turn into a real shitstorm if we don't do something, so I'm going to sign off too. I mean, how many cabinet executives would form a majority? Let's see, you got Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Transportation, Interior, HHS, Education, Energy. That's seven. So you're going to need at least four.
No, you're going to need at least eight because there are 15 cabinet positions. Well, the cabinet includes the vice president, so he's just going to need seven more. No, I think he'll still need eight because the cabinet includes the vice president and the heads of 15 executive departments. Agriculture, Commerce, Defense, Education, Energy, Health and Human Services, Homeland Security, Housing and Urban Development, Interior, Labor, State, Transportation, Treasury, and Veterans Affairs. And who am I missing?
You got me. But I mean, I'm beginning. I mean, we don't have to get this necessarily, you know, down to a science here. But I know we're not the only ones talking or thinking about this, Carol.
Yeah.
How far are we able? I mean, we're seeing this stuff before he even becomes president. Is there any reason to think he's going to stop?
No, I think he's going to get more crazy.
And at
he's gonna just load up on the crazy. I think there he has access to enough cocaine to really get out there and get some crazy going.
If we're doing this, don't you suppose there are others who are as well? Because, I mean, I can't, you know, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse or be boring or anything, but this is some real shit, Carol.
No, Bob, we're all playing what if. What if he does this? What if he does that? What if? And we're all hoping that the whole thing doesn't collapse under its own weight. In the interim, I mean, how much damage can he do before somebody steps in to go, okay, that's it. This is just it.
Well, the problem is the only, unless I am completely wrong about my estimation of the Congress, impeachment is, to quote Nancy Pelosi, off the table. Because this is not a Congress that has either the fortitude, the intellect, or the integrity to impeach a president from its own party.
Absolutely not.
And so that means it's 25th Amendment or act of God.
or an active shooter situation.
Well, I mean, I know people didn't take me seriously when I said I think that he's got, that he's displaying the symptoms of tertiary syphilis.
I listened to that whole thing and I thought, makes sense.
But I can envision a way where he winds up with syphilis and he's, too damned headstrong and stupid and proud to go get treated for it.
Yeah.
And God only knows where, how many nasty places the Trump stump has been.
Ugh. Sorry, some things are just too gross.
I know, but it... See, we saw Reagan descend into the ravages of Alzheimer's.
Yes, we did.
And we saw no one do a damned thing about it.
And talk years later about how terrifying it was. But didn't do anything.
And we have on our side we got nothing to point to. There was no 25th Amendment toward the end of FDR's life, but FDR was not senile when he died. He was just old, broken down, and sick at a very young age. Polio will do that to you.
Yes.
Truman left Hale and Hardy. Kennedy didn't get a chance. Johnson, he died a few years later, but he was healthy up, in the White House. Carter?
Sure.
God bless America. Carter whipped the ass of fucking terminal brain cancer.
Yeah, being a decent human being does that.
Yeah. Just call on.
Is he not like the most moral human being you've ever met in your life?
He and the Dalai Lama form a duo of decency that I don't know when the last time two such were around.
And by the way, I have met Jimmy Carter twice, and he's the most amazing man I've ever met. I was 17 years old, Bob. I'd won a speech contest through the Veterans of Foreign Wars. And the prize was that you got to go to Washington, D.C. And you got to, it was just this great viewing of democracy. And it was, I met Hubert Humphrey and we got a ropes down tour of the White House and we met the president in the Rose Garden. And then they had a congressional dinner for us, which was lovely, except I was seated next to Chuck Grassley, who proceeded to eat off of my plate until I finally just shoved it in front of him.
You're kidding.
Because I was so grossed out. No. And he belches. He belches like uncontrollably. But there was a panel there who had chosen there were two kids from every state that got to go. So there were 100 of us. And there was a panel who chose two of the speeches and they asked us the winners to get up and give their speeches. And mine was one of them. Just as they get ready to announce me, I hear "Hail to the Chief." I freeze. In walks Jimmy Carter, unbeknownst to anyone that he was going to show up to this thing. And he is seated on the dais next to me. And now I have to stand up and give this speech with the President of the United States standing behind me. I am 17 years old. I must have had a look of abject terror.
Did your knees make sounds like castanets?
It must have, because I swear to God, he leaned over, he put his hand on my hand, and he said, "Look," he said, "I have to talk to these people all the time, and I have exactly the same reaction He goes, don't worry about it, honey. He goes, I'm right behind you.
Oh, wow. And
I still get very close thinking about it.
No, I get it.
He was like so decent about everything. And when I got all done, he stood up and he hugged me and he said, thank you so much for writing that. And he said, that's the kind of speech that I wish I could hear on the floor of the Senate and the United States House of Representatives. And it made me want to just grow up and be a better person. It was the impetus for me to go on and write the thing. It's what made me completely unafraid. And then years later, I was at a Habitat for Humanity build, and he was there. And I said, you're probably not going to remember this, but about 15 years ago, and he looked at me and started laughing, and he goes, I remember. I know exactly who you are. I remember.
And politicians have that gift. They do
but
remember
But you think
people.
About all the people that he met over the course of his lifetime. And 20 years later, he remembered this little 17-year-old Iowa farm girl who was scared to death to stand up and speak her voice. And he helped me find it. And that's why I can't... When people criticize him, I just get so angry, not because I have that personal connection with him, but it's because I know. Now, there's a guy who you can see his heart because it's an extension of everything that comes out of his mouth.
Right. I had a Bible verse sent to me by our dear friend Jude up in the Great Northwest, and she went to Luke 6:45. For his mouth speaks from the overflow of his heart. That can work in multiple directions. The same can be said of Jimmy Carter in the circumstance you're describing. And unfortunately, of that one in the vomitous effusion of his thumbs through the Twitter machine.
Yes. Yes. Because that's all I have to judge him by, is the vile shit that comes out of his mouth. And he lies with impunity. He lies, he lies, he lies. And what's the old saying? People who lie about inconsequential things can never be trusted to tell you the truth about really big things.
Right.
And that's why
because lying is second nature.
Well, exactly. Of course it is.
And of course he
loved this country himself. He loves power.
He's spent a lifetime lying to all sorts of people. That Michael Bloomberg
right.
quote, and I'm no Michael Bloomberg fan, but he says, I've moved in the same circles he moves in. All the business community knows that he's a con artist and a liar.
Yes. And this thing about Mexico will pay for the wall later. We're going to make you pay for it now, but Mexico will pay for it later. And I'm sitting there going, motherfucker, how many things did you ask for that you have not paid for? And now you expect a country to pay for a monument to racism and xenophobia. You expect them to pay for it? And he's still calling the media liar over it. Because they called him out. Because they know Mexico's not going to pay for that fucking wall.
There's Vicente Fox. What does it take to get you to understand we are not going to pay for that fucking wall?
He didn't even have to spell it right. I knew just what he was talking about.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Maybe that's how they spell it in Mexico. But the about to be president of the United States is getting trolled by the ex-president of Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what's next? What are you going to do, big boy? Nuke Mexico? But the sad thing is, dare not say that to him, you know, because he might. But there's another one of those nagging questions. The people who actually turn the keys and press the buttons, Carol,
mm-hmm.
They're not 60-year-old generals.
No, they're not.
They're maybe 24-year-old captains. And the actual button pressing, the button pushing, is done, you know, by a kid who's 19 years old sitting on a submarine.
And they have guns. They have people with guns to hold to that person's head to make them push the button. If they're afraid to follow the order, there's another person there with a gun to take out and put to their head. And if they don't do it, they shoot them, and the next guy pushes the button.
I'm going to sleep great tonight. How about you?
I get that there's a way that these things are supposed to work. But, yeah, there's a reason why the left has a collective case of, you know, insomnia. So many people that I know aren't sleeping at night, aren't, you know, they're sick. They're just sick because they see what's coming. And this isn't the world that we planned on giving to our kids. I get that. But I never, ever dreamed that they would be able to completely defund Planned Parenthood when they tucked that into the repeal of the ACA. You know, when one of my best friends who has a history of breast cancer in her family calls me in tears and says, "Do you think I better hurry up and have that double mastectomy now? Because feels like she has to do it preemptively before she gets breast cancer, as so many other women in her family have done in order to survive." I have another friend with a heart condition who is sitting in a hospital in Virginia right now, who knows that it's akin to pulling the plug on her. And she's a gifted writer, comedy writer, and she knows that they're playing Russian roulette with her right now. These are ordinary, everyday people who have real life things that they're dealing with. And they see the tsunami coming. And so we have things like women who are debating on whether to have their breasts cut off today before they can stop. And the only reason that she knew that she really had the gene was because she went to Planned Parenthood and they did the testing. So, yeah, there's a reason why it keeps people up at night. It's conversations like those that keep me up at night. But, you know, if you're going to lead the resistance, you're going to lose a little sleep.
Or even if you're going to participate in the resistance.
We got to lead it, Bob.
Well, I just have a hard time seeing it. Yeah. I'm not comfortable with that whole leader thing, but at least we've got a space here for as long as we can keep it going. We've got a space here where the resistance can come and talk safely, even if the NSA is listening. You know, we'll know we finally made it when
you got a microphone.
We'll know we've really made it when Il Duce starts tweeting about us.
Well, God knows I've been trolling the fuck out of him.
And you got to wonder,
And I'm getting lots.
I mean, he gets on his Twitter. Do you does he see the tweets that come back at him?
I don't know that he doesn't respond to anybody negatively. He only retweets people who can say things more disgusting than he can.
I mean, it's kind of weird just to try to figure out how he uses it.
They have trolls who do his dirty work for him.
Oh, I don't. By the way, a separate topic. Since we've talked a little bit about Russia, I did. I went and looked at pictures of Grigory Rasputin.
Mm-hmm.
And I swear, I think if you Photoshop the beard off of him. Yeah, there might be some. Because let's see. He had Mikhail, Anna, Grigory, Dmitry, Matryona, Varvara, and Paraskeva. Those were his kids. So.
Really?
Yeah. And of course, he was 1869 to 1916.
Oh.
And
so he could be one of the, you know, illegitimate children.
Never know. I mean, seriously, if you go to Wikipedia, and if anybody's really good at the whole the Photoshop thing, there's a good picture of Rasputin pulling at his beard. If you Photoshop that beard off of him, you might wind up with Big Bad Vladdy Daddy.
Oh, I see it.
Huh?
Yeah?
I mean, the schnoz is a little wrong.
But the angry eyes.
And if you scroll down to the picture of him with his brood, his beard's not quite so long. But, yeah, you could make something out of that, too.
Yeah, you could. I see it.
Oh, well, America doesn't know any history, so we're probably just, you know, we're just fucking off. But, speaking of Russia, guess what the Russian embassy in the UK did? They tweeted out Pepe the Frog.
Oh, my God.
Kid you not, Russian Embassy UK, at Russian Embassy. In today's papers, pundits call on at Theresa May to disrupt possible Russia-US thaw. No trust in Britain's best friend and ally? Accompanied by a picture of Pepe.
Oh,
which is undeniably a symbol of hate that, you know, Twitter has forgotten to not tolerate.
Speaking of people who have graphic design skills, I have a friend who is currently making a new Great Seal of the United States for me.
Oh, yeah?
Instead of an eagle, it's a vulture. Instead of the arrows, he's holding keyboards. And in the middle is a big dumpster fire.
Oh, that's very nice. You came up with that all on your lonesome, or was that a committee effort?
Oh, no. I did it, and he said, "I'm on it, sister." And when it's done, I will share. He's the same guy who did my Radio Free Smartass.
Nice.
Uh-huh. And he's the one who did my Facebook button that says, "Don't be such an asshole."
Well, here's a theory for you. Asa just said, "To be quite honest, I don't think Trump tweets at all. I think that whole thing is subbed out to the Russian factions to monitor the news and tweet accordingly. I don't think Orange Supreme has the mental capacity to use a smartphone." But did you?
I don't know.
You might find this interesting. It was a little bit after the election. There's a guy in Russia named Alexander Dugin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's a he's an advisor, a crony, and a philosopher, much liked by Pootie Poot.
Uh-huh.
And in Russian, of course, so it's in Cyrillic, which I don't read, so I have to trust the translation. He wrote on Facebook, "Washington is ours."
I believe that.
Evan O'Connell tweeted it out and said, "Alexander Dugin, Putin's Eminence Gris, Washington is ours, Chisinau is ours, Sofia is ours, now we just have to drain the swamp at home." And he's a fascist philosopher who is frequently quoted by the white supremacist neo-Nazi types.
You mean Trump's base?
Precisely.
Eagle?
But Pepe, the UK, the Russia embassy in the UK is using Pepe. Pepe the Nazi frog.
Okay.
Because neo-Nazis in America have a frog.
I don't know, Bob.
I don't know either. I don't know nothing no more.
All I can say is I'm going to go violate the plea deal right now.
Sounds like
after
a lovely idea. Use a straw.
Yes, swirly straws for everyone.
Absolutely. And all the cheap tequila we can stand.
Absolutely. But anyway, I wanted to just stop by and say hi, let you know I'm over my illness, and
I'm glad because you had it and sounded like it was hell, and then I got it and I knew it was.
I slept through Christmas and Barbie just left me laying there.
Oh, bless her heart.
She did.
Well, you probably needed it.
I did. That I did. I slept for like 72 hours straight.
But now coffee breaks over and you're back on your head and you're up on the roofs and
Yep, that's exactly right.
And couldn't care less about the Kansas City Chiefs.
The what? Oh, yeah. Go Chiefs and take the Royals with you.
I was thinking about it. I guess the Chiefs get a pass because they're not actually using a Native American image, you know, to advance their... Yep, right. It's just an arrowhead.
Whatever. Oh, but did you see the, I hate memes, I really do, but I could not resist the Eddie Murphy as Buckwheat meme?
Yes!
Today's word is dictate, as in, Mr. Trump, how does Putin's dictate?
I actually made it, I didn't lol, I laughed out loud, I really did.
Like,
today's
like
word is dictate! Today's word is dictate. To use it in a sentence, hey, Trump, how do Putin dictate?
That's it.
Mr. Wheat.
And while I usually object to the use of the pickaninny, that it was just funny.
No, that's just Eddie Murphy doing Buckwheat. Yeah.
Yes, it was.
And if you can ever find it, one of the most brilliant early critiques of the 24-hour news cycle is to be found in the SNL ongoing skit that ran that night. The Killing of Buckwheat.
Buckwheat, yes, I loved that. I absolutely love that. Yep. All right, darling. Well, Tess is barking at me, so she must need out.
Well, and give our best to Cat Stevens, being how he's busy ruling the world.
He's pouting because I won't let him go play Jesus.
Play Jesus? Walk on the water, yeah, you mean?
Yes. Yes, he fell through the ice last week, and I had to bring him in the house and wrap him up and thaw out his block of ice tail. And he is fine, by the way, but he learned absolutely nothing from it.
By gosh.
Nothing.
Are you? I hate to say it, but are you sure Cat Stevens isn't a Republican?
I don't know, but he sure is an asshole.
Well, I mean, that's an early sign. Can't learn from mistakes.
No, that's... Yeah, I know. Are you a Republican? Oh, fuck, he left. He left. We were talking about him, and he just got up and walked out and said, fuck you guys.
Fuck you people. Carol, have a good night, dear.
I shall. Best to you and Agnes.
Well, thank you kindly. We need all we can get.
All right. Later, Gainer.
Later now. The one and only Queen of the Minions, Carol Baker. In the meantime, a couple of notes rolling in. Oh, by the way, the courtesy of Gerald. Happy poisoned West Virginia water anniversary. My, how time flies. It was 3 years ago tonight that we were talking, and toward the end of the program, news began breaking that there had been some sort of chemical dumping spill disaster that had found its way into the water supply earlier in the day of, you know, 300,000 human beings. We talked about that quite extensively for the next few weeks, and really, there was no happy news to come out of it. But mark the anniversary. It was kind of the beginning, in a way, of actually paying attention to water supplies in the United States. And by the way, just in case anybody's wondering, 3 years on, the involuntary experiment in which 300,000 people are participating to find out just exactly how poisonous methylcyclohexane methanol is continues. It'll be going on for about another 17 years or so. Note coming in from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line, the inmates are running the asylum. The stupid people have won this round. It reminds me of when Bush was installed. Every protest I participated in during the lead-up and after the invasion of Afghanistan, Iraq, etc., I'd be confronted by Republicans who told me to get a job and how I was unpatriotic for questioning the exalted leader Bush. Fast forward 8 years. After all the chickens came home to roost and the economy was in the tank, and suddenly there were no more Republicans saying a word. In fact, it was hard to find one that said they voted for Bush. It gives me no pleasure to be on the correct side of the issues, even when it was not popular, with the only benefit being the right to say, I told you so, after the shit hits the fan. It's as if we're in a car with a toddler who complains the entire trip about how long it's taking to get there, and our solution is to let the bitching toddler drive. It brings an entirely new meaning to Jesus take the wheel. These religious zealots are going to get us all killed, and the pundits will simply be calling the plays up until the mushroom cloud forms over the cities. Why I have not yet run screaming into the woods is beyond me. Signed, Matt, in San Francisco. And just as an addendum, Matt said the only benefit being the right to say I told you so after the shit hits the fan. Yeah, the problem is, when you say, I told you so, after the shit hits the fan, what do you get from the for-profit media and all the goddamn Republicans who made the mess in the first place? Well, this is no time to be playing the blame game. Yeah, it's never time to be playing the blame game when the blame devolves squarely upon them. Benito Cheeto, Trumple Thin Skin, Orange Twitler, if that dumb little bastard stubs his toe somewhere in the next 4 to 8 years, it will always be Obama's fault. When those aforementioned coal miners I was talking about, who went to the polls eagerly and actively, because, you know, we had one of that ones in the White House. White House! I mean, come on! When they ran and they voted for Trump because he's going to make Mark great again, and they had been told repeatedly that the Republicans were coming for health care, well, they only thought it was, you know, those people's health care, not theirs. My grandmother was born in 1904. One of them was. The other was born in 1894. But my grandmother was born in 1904, and she died in 1995. And she was able, her husband, my grandfather, died in 1968. Let's do some quick ciphering. 78. That's 27 years she lived without her husband. And every month, sure as clockwork, the black lung check arrived that helped to keep her alive so that she would not die in miserable poverty. Well, tucked away in the Affordable Care Act was a provision that made it easier for women like her to get black lung, because getting black lung benefits for someone who either suffered it or was going to suffer the loss of this, of the person who suffered it, had become brutally difficult. Thank you, Republicans. And so the Affordable Care Act made it easier. And they went and voted that away. And you know whose fault it's going to be when the Republicans kill the Affordable Care Act? You got it. Obama's. It will always be Obama's fault. Because Negro. I hope we've got that all the way down to our toenails. It's about 28 minutes before the hour. Thus far, Charlene stands as the only one kicking in on fundraising this evening. Thank you so much, Charlene. Hopefully in the next 28 minutes or so, there will be a couple other people jump in so that we won't want to start the program tomorrow evening, Tuesday, Titanic Tuesday, with a $380 fundraising hole. It's important that we keep up with this each and every night. I'm sorry, but it is. If we ever get those $410 a month subscribers, we'll be a lot closer to not having to sweat each and every evening. But again, you don't have to listen to ads. So maybe that's kind of worth it. I referenced the reminder I got when I looked at DirecTV Now the other night. It's all ads. You can't get away from the damn things. But yeah, we got $180 to go, 28 minutes to get there, or, you know, 21 hours and 28 minutes or something like that. And hopefully we will. Clarence writes and says, subject line, the irony of movies. Bob, I feel like we the people are nothing but extras in a Woody Allen parody of American politics, except this flick is real. The plot is diabolical and devious with a terrible ending. And a quick correction coming via Michael in Madison. Rick Perry, correction, Rick Perry initially forgot that he wanted to eliminate the Department of Energy, so there's always the chance that he'll forget same during his entire tenure as secretary. Perhaps that forgetfulness done showed us what's in his heart. Right? Yeah. Right. Man, I'm sitting here looking at this image of Pepe the Frog that was tweeted out by the Russian embassy. I wonder how the Putin apologists feel about that. Oh, they're probably okay with it. Pooty Poot's such a nice guy. And speaking of media, I don't know if you saw this or not, hence the fact that I'm mentioning it. You know, that's the way the program works. Oh, right quick. Michael also pointing out Dugan and the Swamp. Speaking of Alexander Dugan and the Swamp, Richard Spencer retweeted this just 3 days after the election. Richard Spencer, remember, being the neo-Nazi who runs the National Policy Institute. He's the stiff arm salute guy. Swamp is to become new name for, this is Alexander Dugan. Swamp is to become new name for globalist sect. Open Society Adepts, LGBT Maniacs, Soros Army, Post-Humanists, and so on. Drain the Swamp is not only American categorical imperative. It is global challenge for all of us. Every people now is under power of its own swamp.
We all together should start the fight against Russian swamp, French swamp, German swamp, and so on. We need to purge our societies from the influence of swamp. So instead of fighting between ourselves, let us drain it together. Drainers of the whole world should be unite!
Well, now. Well, I mean, he means well, doesn't he? I mean, because Pooty Poot's such a sweet thing. But we talked a little earlier about the normalization of Trumpism. If you ever wanted to see a perfect example of it, witness Mike Allen, co-founder of Politico. Quite the little power broker in D.C. Mike Allen is. He's the guy who coined the phrase, win the morning, which was a way of saying it doesn't matter what we print as long as we get clicks and sales and ads. You know, the very definition of the for-profit media. Well, don't ever say that Mike Allen at Politico doesn't know where his bread's buttered. He sat down for a big old interview with that website that rhymes with light and fart. And I mean, you want to? He walked away, and his nose was so brown from having it, because he likes access. And Steve Bannon, racist Bannon, is going to be in the White House, but racist Bannon, well, it's not like he's going to forget what's going on over there. He said that website that rhymes with light and fart is ahead of the curve in comprehending the anger of the silent majority who voted for Trumple Thinskin. Where did silent majority come from? Oh, yeah, Nixon. Normalizing. Always normalizing. Just remember that name, Mike Allen. Thank you, Cletus. Cletus is a sweet puppy. Cletus just went out to her bone stash out in the yard and dug up $15. So now we're down to 165 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Thank you, Cletus. Thank you very, very much. I'm sure this has absolutely nothing to do with anything at all. I mean, it can't possibly have to do with, say, the people who support, you know, Trump, you know, the neo-Nazis, Richard Spencer et al. That story I was talking about with Carol earlier, I know she was having some audio breakup issues, but the woman who received a tweet of her face imprinted on a lampshade that came from a Twitter account called 6 Million More. Ah, she's Jewish. And she's leading a campaign to bring pressure to bear on Betsy DeVos at the Department of Education to honor and adhere to the tenets of Title IX of the U.S. Code, which applies to equal opportunity for all genders in education. Well, she's been subjected to a barrage of anti-Semitic hate of her for being Jewish. And so, of course, have her colleagues. And it is disgusting in the extreme, to say the very least. She herself was suspended from Twitter for calling out bigotry, for calling out the hateful and ugliness to which she had been subjected. Alexandra Brodsky. She tried to log into her Twitter account this morning, found out she'd been suspended. It's particularly interesting because she's a fellow at the National Women's Law Center in Washington. And she had been deluged with filthy racist tweets over the course of the weekend. The one I mentioned to you that showed her face superimposed on a lampshade. Yeah, it was accompanied by the words, "Welcome to Trump's America. See you in the camps." And she aggregated screenshots of the filth that she'd been subjected to. And that's when Twitter banned her. Without banning the neo-Nazis. She went on to Facebook and said, "So let's get this straight. Twitter still hasn't suspended all the bigots I reported, but they've suspended me for calling out bigotry. I call bullshit. It has become apparent that Twitter doesn't take action against harassers until there's public pressure." She said that to CNN Money. One of the people who tweeted at her had a bio on Twitter that read, "Time to finish the job once and for all. German-American, pro-Holocaust." That person's still active. Eventually, Twitter did reactivate her account, but said nothing to her about it. Meanwhile, another woman who shares her name, but is not her, also received emails from accounts like Uncle Adolf, Kikey McKikeface, and Lampshade Machine. Subject lines included, "Hail Trump! Gas the Jews! You can persecute us! You can even ban us from Twitter, but we will never capitulate!" At one point, BuzzFeed surveyed 2,700 Twitter users who had been subjected to online abuse. Of the respondents, 90% of them said that Twitter did absolutely nothing after they reported the abuse. You know, because free speech. Well, that's all sort of a prologue, I suppose, for something else that happened today. Today, in at least 6 states, Jewish centers all received bomb threats. They were forced to evacuate after anonymous callers, of course, called in the threats. It happened in New Jersey, in South Carolina, in Florida, Tennessee, Delaware, Maryland. May have happened to other places as well. A total of 16 Jewish community centers received such threats. Michael Feinstein is executive director of the Jewish Community Center in Rockville, Maryland. Interviewed by Think Progress, he said, "We have a preschool with almost 200 children and probably another 30 or 40 staff. Everyone was evacuated calmly and quickly. It seems to be an unfortunate trend."
I don't think this is an unfortunate trend. I don't think fortune, un or otherwise, which is another way of saying bad luck, has a goddamn thing to do with it. We are in the throes of a fascist surge, a fascist wave in this country that comes with all the fascist trimmings, not least of which are concerted attacks upon people who are Jewish. There's nothing unfortunate about that. It is deliberate and has nothing to do with a roll of the dice or a random act. Unfortunate is something random that happens to be bad. This, however, is deliberate, concerted, malevolent, malignant, hateful. And it's terrorism. Ooh. But then again, that raises the eternal question, can white people be capable of terrorism? I say yes. Seems awfully hard to get the judicial system in this country to say the same thing. Thank you very kindly, Sharon in Columbus. Fundraising goal just went down to $155. Thank you, Sharon. Thank you so kindly. You're standing alongside with Steve and Ms. Karen and Cletus this evening, as well as Charlene. Thank you very, very much indeed. 16 community centers. 6 states or more. Here's an interesting tidbit. The woman who staffs the front desk in the Jewish Community Center in Columbia, South Carolina, she received the bomb threat over the phone. The woman said the person making the threat sounded like an older woman. She said, "Yes, not long ago, there's a bomb in the building." And I was like, that doesn't make any sense. So, like everything else, we have to ask the question, gee, Trump voters, were you voting for this too, or were you just under a rock? Oh, you didn't know he was supported by neo-Nazis, did you, precious? Oh, special snowflakes. Of course you knew. And now that they know, guess what they're still not doing? They're not denouncing it. Oh, yeah, yeah, I know. If a Muslim waiter at Starbucks delivers a white winger a cold cup of coffee, the entire Muslim world has to denounce him. But neo-Nazis? People have a right to their opinions, right? Yeah. 11 minutes before the hour, and let's get another conversation in. Let's check in with Scott and Punky. Hey, Scott.
Hello. Happy Monday, Bob.
Happy Monday, Scott.
Glad you made it back from your whirlwind trip to Cleveland.
Oh, Jesus. Now,
was that Ohio or Tennessee? I guess it was Ohio.
Ohio.
Okay. All right. Never been that far north.
I didn't get quite all the way there, so I didn't get to stop. I didn't get to get an awesome corned beef sandwich, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I was semi-productive for a wee bit earlier today, about an hour ago. I sent an email to both of my U.S. senators, Dianne Feinstein, who's been around a while, and our newly elected senator, Senator Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris.
To let them know that I didn't like any of Trump's picks for these key government positions, but I listed 6 of them, which get special merit, or at least dishonorable mention, And those were Jeff Sessions, Attorney General, Scott Pruitt, EPA Administrator, Steve Mnuchin, Treasury Secretary, Betsy DeVos, Education Secretary, Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, and bringing up the rear in the way that only he can, Representative Tom Price for Secretary of HHS. And I invited both of my senators to please, either as senators or if they're members of any of the committees for these hearings that begin tomorrow, to please not let them anywhere near the levers of power. So that's what I did. And I encourage everybody to write and do that today. And the quickest way to do it, if you're not sure of the names or contact information for either of your senators or congresspeople or even your local elected officials, there's a website, usa.gov/elected-officials. And you put in your zip code and address, and you get any possible contact information for just about everybody from dog catcher on up or on down, depending on how you're viewing things. So,
and so give that URL again.
Yeah, it's usa.gov/elected-officials. And that'll take you to a website. You put in your street address and zip code, and it'll list instantly all of the contact information for virtually anybody who's elected in your region.
And so, just as a matter of curiosity, when you reached out to the respective offices of Senators Feinstein and Harris, did you reach out to Washington or to your local office?
Well, wherever the emails go, I'm guessing they go to D.C. I've written, well, Harris being so new, I've never written her before, but I've written to Feinstein, and prior to the arrival of Senator Harris, I've written to Barbara Boxer a number of times over the years, and I think they go to D.C. I thought about calling the local offices.
You might want to follow up with a call to the local offices, because they don't get quite as much contact as D.C. does.
Yeah. Well, that's a good idea. Maybe I'll follow up tomorrow and let them know that, just kind of reiterate, pardon me, my brief message of today. I know that you're right about the local offices. In the times I've had to contact Representative Susan Davis, who's been my congressperson ever since I've lived out here, she's always been quite attentive. I've visited the office a time or two, and they've always been very quick, you know, to address whatever thing I'm bringing to them. So, and really, if you live in a red state or you have GOP congresspeople or congressmen or women and senators, still write and let them know, because it's that old media thing. If you've ever worked in the media, the GM, general manager, and the program director will tell you time and again, for every letter or call that they get about something that was done or not done on the local airwaves, it probably represents a lot of other people who feel the same way but who didn't take the time to write or call.
Right. It's kind of like the old broadcast model of talk radio.
Yeah.
The old rule of thumb in a major market was that for every person who calls a talk radio program, there are 1,000 people who didn't have the courage to pick up the phone. No, I'm right here. Oh, Scott. Scott?
Oh, okay, because I'm hearing you on the...
Yeah, you can't rely on the speaker, man.
Hello?
Oh, that was weird. Sometimes it happens, but no, I don't know what happened there, but let's see if we've got Scott back. Okay, any better this time?
Yeah, sorry about that. I think what happened was I took Punky into the bathroom because he was making noise, and there's like a dead spot for this device.
Oh, okay. No,
but anyway,
all I was saying is that in talk radio in a big market, you worked with the rule of thumb that for every one person who picked up the phone, there were 1,000 others who were afraid to.
Yeah, and that's the point. I mean, you know, when you've got the presidency and the House and the Senate all in GOP hands, it makes it more important than ever, I think, to let people know who are supposedly representing you exactly how you feel, and don't give them a moment's rest, and be courteous when you write, and don't, you know, give a major, you know, epic poem about a topic. Just be short and succinct and polite.
Yeah, and don't fulminate or froth at the mouth, because that's what the Fox viewers and Trumpanzees do.
Yeah, yeah. And also, it probably isn't a bad idea, if you have C-SPAN, to join the crowd at Washington Journal in the morning, because it's pretty easy to get in. And if you're making sense, even sometimes when you're not making sense, they'll let you talk for a couple of minutes, and you can get a lot of information across in that time. I guess my point is that old saying we had in the 60s, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. So let's shift from being part of the problem over to being part of the solution, or at least attempting to be part of the solution. You know?
Well, yeah. Silence, as the old saying goes, is acceptance.
Well, yeah, what is that, the term? It's assent, giving, is that the word, assent?
Yeah.
Yeah. And in times that we're in, it has become paramount that we become more involved, because voting every 2 or 4 years doesn't make it. I mean, that's important, too, in its own way. But you've got to let them know that you're there. And I know that there are people who say, well, the system is corrupt. It doesn't make a damn bit of difference. Even if it doesn't, you have the satisfaction of letting them know that, A, you're out here, B, you're paying attention, and C, here's what I'd like for you to do or don't do. And that's got to register on some level, and it's got to have some impact at some point. You know?
Well, you hope. I mean,
well,
that's the way this is supposed to work.
Well, what else are you going to do? I mean, I'm not going to give up. I've never given up. I've been a rabble-rouser for more years than I care to remember. And sometimes it's worked and sometimes it hasn't. But the important thing is you've got to show up on the field ready to play. And it now is more important than ever. Everything's on the line.
And to the extent, I tend to think that there is considerable import in people in states that have Democratic senators, you know, I mean, unlike my Democratic senator, or maybe Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota, those are quislings. They're going to do the bidding of Mitch McConnell, whatever. But if you live in a state with a Democratic senator who you think will even remotely hear your voice, lift them up, bolster them, pat them on the back, give them some courage, tell them it's okay that it's okay to actually do the moral thing and oppose these monstrosities, that you'll get their backs.
And I don't know about Senator Harris because I didn't do the research, but I know that Senator Feinstein is on the Judiciary Committee. So it's a double impact with her, both as a senator and in her minority position on the panel that will be conducting the confirmation hearings for Sessions as AG, God help us. So.
There we go.
But anyway, I know time is short.
Yep, we got to get out of here. We're at it. Tell Punky I'm sorry he had to be stuck in the bathroom talking to the mirror.
Well, he says some of his best material in those situations. So there.
Well, him and Michigan J. Frog, right?
Exactly.
All right, Scott, you have a good night.
Okay, Bob.
Bye now. And it is time to get out of here. Before we leave, a quick brain tickler. I'll bet you didn't know that it was 25 years ago yesterday that George H.W. Pappy Bush made us all so proud by vomiting all over the Prime Minister of Japan. Yes, yes. One Keiichi Miyazawa, Pappy Bush, yacked in his lap. Because history. Good night, y'all. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.